I'm here with Gabby and Stephen, but I'd just like it if you'd introduce yourselves and give us a bit of an idea on what you do.
Sure thing. Thanks very much, Sue. My name's Gabby. I work for GetUp. I'm an organiser in South Australia, so I work with volunteers mainly in Adelaide and Adelaide Metro, organising campaigns to campaign for all sorts of different progressive causes. And I absolutely love my job and I work a lot and I do a lot of things that are sort of connected with that, but perhaps outside or that you could describe as like progressive movement building work and things that are supported by GetUp in various ways. And one of those projects I did with Stephen, who's here with me, which we ran a conference in January 2020, and we are now looking at ways we can empower the energy that's come out of that conference and the learning that's come out of that conference and turn it into actions that have impact and make our society and city a more progressive and better place to live in.
And my name's Stephen. I'm an economist at Adelaide University, and my approach to economics is, the name doesn't really matter, but it's called modern monetary theory. And through being a modern monetary theorist, I got to know somebody called Stephanie Kelton down the years, who in two presidential campaigns has been Bernie Sanders' chief economic advisor, and she's just been named as one of the 8 people on the economics panel preparing for a Biden administration in which Bernie Sanders would have a lot of influence in terms of how the economic policy agenda was made up. We were lucky enough to have Stephanie come and visit us in Adelaide in January, and Gabby was talking about the conference that we organised at the time, and that conference and having Stephanie here, I know, inspired and empowered a lot of people to take an interest in progressive economics and the economics of a Green New Deal and issues like that. And the Just Transitions group, which Gabby runs, is one of the things which has come out of that conference.
It was an amazing conference. It was a long weekend and, what, 400 people?
About. And people stayed right until the very last session, which was fantastic. And I think the word has spread around a little bit about that conference. And
must have taken some pulling together.
Well, we didn't quite know what we were in for.
It did. I had to, regardless of the carbon emissions involved, I had to fly to New York and back, amongst other things, to bring it all together. So, yes, it did take that's where Stephanie lives and works. It did take quite a lot of doing. We also had Andrews Bernard here, who's one of the advisors for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who a lot of people might have heard of, and there were some other Americans that came over as well. I'm a huge fan, as I have been for many years, of Stephanie's work, and it really was wonderful having her here. She was a really big draw card, I think, as far as the conference.
Absolutely.
The ripples of her visit continue to be felt. In fact, this is our opportunity to tell everybody that Stephanie has a book coming out. It's released, I think, on the 9th of June in the US. One of our projects that we're working on is getting an Australian print run of that book, which we will be selling at cost price for people. You can find it online. We're starting a little page where you can buy yourself a copy, and also you could sponsor us to take a copy with us when we visit our MP or our senator, or we meet with our union leader or business leaders. We want to make that book
journalists
absolutely. We want to make that book available to people who are in roles where they get that kind of decision-making power, and they can read it, and it may well change their outlook completely.
It's a terrific book. She actually finished it while she was here in Adelaide, because I was looking over her shoulder when she typed it up for the final edit of it. So I've read it, and it's very, very readable. It's not an economics textbook or anything. It's really a guide to how to transform not just the US but other countries around the world, like Australia, in a more progressive way.
Yeah. The book's called The Deficit Myth. So have a look online for that if you're listening and you'd like to find out more. You can Google The Deficit Myth and Stephanie Kelton and you should be able to find out about the book and where you can get it.
There's a colon in the title too, and after the colon it's Modern Money and the Birth of the People's
Economy.
That's
yes.
Right.
And that's what we're really on about, isn't it? We're about a people's economy, a people's recovery from the COVID-19 situation, and Australian Green New Deal. However you want to call it, we know what we're talking about. It's a transition away from fossil fuels to 100% renewable energy, and a job guarantee which provides meaningful work for anybody that needs or wants it.
Yeah, the title is a bit of a contentious one sometimes. Some people don't like the term Green New Deal because they think it's sort of an American term from the Roosevelt New Deal in the 1930s. Other people don't like you to use a name with the word transition, because in Australia in the past the word transition has often been applied to things like getting rid of the car industry and not offering people any alternative employment and just leaving them to struggle on their own. So particularly with the unions, that's not a very attractive term either. Yeah. So that's why I was saying at the conference that we don't care what people call it, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But a move towards an economy that works for everyone and where we rapidly transition away from our reliance on fossil fuels, including exporting fossil fuels to the rest of the world, is what everybody knows that we need to do. And the big message that we have for everybody is that if people think we can't afford, because of a lack of money, to have a situation where nobody is involuntarily unemployed or underemployed or in insecure employment, people think we can't afford to eliminate homelessness. If people think we can't afford to make the investments we need to make in green infrastructure and in transitioning away from fossil fuels, all that's wrong. Very often what's presented to us as though it's economic necessity, as far as politicians' decisions are concerned, are political decisions. They're about
choices.
They're about choices. They're guided often by interest groups, not by necessity, and we're often intimidated. I think we imagine there's no other choices available to our politicians when they're on.
Yeah, and it goes for both sides too.
Yeah.
I mean, you certainly hear Labor politicians will say this debt will be a burden on future generations.
Mm.
I think our job is to say, well, look back in history, the debt that we had from the recovery from the Second World War, that wasn't a burden on future generations. The myth that the deficit is a bad thing is what Stephanie is explains in her book, is not the case. So if you think instead about a deficit being a government deficit being instead a surplus for the rest of us, so a people surplus. A government deficit is a private and community surplus.
That's right. It just means the government is spending more into the economy than it's taking out. And what people sometimes call the national debt, it's not the national debt at all. It's not our debt. It is anybody's debt. It's the government's debt. But it's just dollars that the government spent into the system and hasn't yet taxed back out yet. And of course, the government issues our currency so they can't ever run out. And if I want to shock people a little bit, then I'll sometimes say it's not really a debt at all. It's just dollars they've spent and they haven't taken back yet. That's all. They choose to issue things we call government bonds that pay interest. They don't have to. Those bonds play a useful role, and if people are retirees and they have any private retirement income, then some of that income is interest payments that the government's making on its bonds. They didn't need to issue the bonds, half the bonds are owned in Australia by often by people like me who are saving up for their retirement through our superannuation.
Mm.
So would you say it's a bit like borrowing, the right pocket borrowing from the left pocket?
It's just government bonds are really better thought of as a form of money. So when people talk about the government's debt, it's money the government's created through spending. They're not taken back in taxes. And we haven't, you and I haven't borrowed that money into existence from a bank. Instead, the government spent that money into existence. They could have just left it in the banking system as deposits. They chose not to. They chose to offer savers nice, safe, interest-bearing things called government bonds. The government didn't need to do that. It was a choice to do that. And I'm not saying they should necessarily stop doing that, because those bonds play a useful role in the financial system. But whereas everybody else, including the state government, including local councils and businesses and you and me, before we spend dollars, we have to go and find them. We need to have earned them or take them out of our past savings or borrow them and maybe get into trouble if we borrow too much. With the government, it's the other way around. The government spends new dollars into circulation and they tax some of them back out of circulation. Okay, mm-hmm. They spend and then they tax. The rest of us have to earn dollars before we spend. We're in a completely different position from the government. And every time that you hear politicians talking about the government as though it's a household or as though it's somebody's business, they're just misleading people, because they're in a completely different position to everybody.
We can never, the Australian government can never run out of Australian dollars.
That's absolutely correct, and it's not just lefty progressives that will tell you that. It's very right-wing American central bankers that have often said that down the years, because it's just self-evidently true.
Except it seems to be this massive blind spot. Well, we have kind of gone off topic a little bit.
But it's really interesting.
Yeah.
And it needs to be said, doesn't it? Mm. Because if that's the case, what's the motivation for them not to do it?
Excellent question.
There are a variety of motivations. In some cases, people genuinely don't understand.
A lot of cases.
In a lot of cases. It has been suggested more than once in the past that the great majority of our federal members of parliament literally don't understand how money works.
Members of parliament don't understand?
Absolutely. I guarantee that most of them don't. I also guarantee the majority of the cabinet won't. And the majority of the shadow cabinet.
Oh, that's scary.
Why would you expect them to, necessarily? If you're a lawyer, or if you come through all sorts of routes to get into Parliament, you can be a very intelligent person, but if you imagine that you understand how things work, and so you never question how things work, then you're not going to learn just by some automatic process of osmosis. But in some people's cases, for sure, it's because it suits them, or it suits... It suits interest groups which support them and which they support. And the austerity idea is a very attractive one, particularly to politicians who argue that you need to cut taxes on rich people to give them an incentive to create jobs, and they talk about wealth creators. But if you're going to argue that, and then you argue, but we need to balance our budget or run a surplus, that means the next step in the argument is you need to make the government smaller, and the next step in the argument is you need to privatise things and deregulate them, and then you get your mates to run those other things in the private sector, and you end up working for your mates. And unfortunately, when I talk in this way, people might think I'm just talking about the coalition, but I'm not. It's both sides of politics. This is true. There are plenty of Labour politicians who end up working for mining companies or infrastructure on infrastructure projects in the private sector. And that's what we had Cameron Murray at the conference, and his book Game of Mates was basically about that.
So I guess, like, trying to dispel the myth that austerity is going to be necessary to recoup the money that we've spent on helping people come through this crisis, that's our big job that we're trying to achieve.
That's part of it. There's absolutely no reason. The only reason that you'd ever need to practice what people might regard as austerity is if there was too much spending and inflation was taking off. Now that's not going to happen anytime soon.
No, so there's miles away from
there's no other issue there. The government is not going to have a crisis relating to its debt, and there will never be a crisis relating to Australian government debt as long as the Australian government doesn't do what happened 50 years ago and borrow foreign currencies, which we don't do anymore. Mm. And we don't need to, because we don't have the same monetary system
that
we did then. So they can't ever run out of dollars. They don't rely on anybody to lend them money because they don't need to borrow it in the first place.
It's so deliberate and calculating and cold-hearted that most of these politicians have children. They have, you know, they want future generations. You can't help but see what's happening to the environment.
Yeah.
And the people living on Newstart, it's just impossible. That was. It's possible now since COVID, but they're going to go back to where they were, apparently.
Yeah.
It's so cold-hearted if they don't have to do it.
Well, we have to try and stop them going back to where they were. If they go all the way back to where they were, they might find they overstretch themselves, because there will be a lot of people who would not have dreamt that they were going to be reliant on Newstart, who will still be on that tax season payment. Some of those people would be coalition voters.
Mm.
So maybe they will, maybe they won't later on in the year. If they do, then it might be a bit like John Howard's industrial relations reforms, which were a step too far and helped to cost him an election. But yes, it's one of the things that we have to campaign about. And there are other things that have changed that we need not to change back. There's basically nobody who's involuntarily homeless at the moment.
Yeah.
We need to keep it that
way. Keep it that way.
Yeah.
There's 500 people in motels at the moment.
And we don't want them to stay in motels.
No.
We want them to have affordable housing.
Well, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And it's evident that it can be done. Yeah. We've seen it.
I think with homelessness, the local government has a big role to play, and if you can, local government is a great way for people to get involved in politics.
Mm.